Okay, so we're on. So, Reish Samaches Sif Gimel. So, a couple of... There's one... So the main theme of Reish Samach Gimel is figuring out what you need a basin for. And then the two side themes, one is there's a comment that the Shach makes that just leads to a interesting discussion. We'll see what that is. And then the third is the issue of who actually qualifies to be on a basin. What is the status, perhaps, of non-Orthodox Bati Dinim? So I did, there is the link in the chat if you need. There are, I did, even if you have your own books, I do suggest looking at the link, because there are a couple of copies of Tshuvos from Rav Moshe that I put on there. Okay, so here we go. So we're in, so on page Kuf Pei Vav in the Beis Yosef, so you have the tour in the Beis Yosef, and the tour makes the comment that everything, whether telling them about mitzvos or the milah or the tefillah, all three of those aspects should be in front of three dayanim that are all kosher to make a judgment. Right, so that's ideal. That's the way that things are done. L'chachila. However, b'di'evet, things change a little up. So the Beis Yosef quotes the sources here. So the Beis Yosef says, yeah, the starting point is a Gemara in Maseches Yevamos, daf memvav amud beis, where Amar Rabba uvda hava bei Rabbi Chiya, that there was this occurrence that happened within the house of Rabbi Chiya. Now, the Beis Yosef leaves off what that occurrence was, but the Gemara actually continues on that, where was it? There it is. Amar Rabba uvda hava bei Rabbi Chiya, v'Rav Yosef masti Rabbi Oshia, and Rav Yosef taught name Rabbi Oshia, was also there, Rav Safra masti Rabbi Oshia, Rabbi Chiya, right? The asal kame gir shemov lo tavel. Now, what happened was that a gir showed up that had his milah, but had not yet gone to the mikvah. So Amar Lei, they said to him, Shohi kan ad l'machar v'nat belinach. They said, oh, wait here, or find a place to stay over tonight, and we'll tovel you tomorrow morning. You'll go to the mikvah tomorrow. So it seems like an innocent enough comment, and if you had asked me, I would have said, why are they waiting till tomorrow? I would have said, well, because the mikvah is being used by the woman at night, right? And this guy can't just show up to have a geirus at night. That's what I would have thought. But the Gemara says, nope, we learned three important halachos here. He says, hey, Shema mina ger tzarech shlosha. The first is that a ger requires three people, right? Ushma mina eno ger at shimo v'yipo, that he's not a ger until both things happen. Ushma mina in matbilin ger balayla, that you don't convert a convert at night. So the Gemara says, v'neim ashma mina nami b'inan mumchin. It says, well, maybe we should also learn out from here that you require mumchin, the fact that he said we're going to wait for the three rabbis to get together. The Gemara says, no, dilma de'iklu. He says, maybe it just happened to be that there were three big Talmidei Chachamim that were walking around. You can't necessarily prove that from this case. Now, one could raise questions about the other three halachos also, whether you would learn it out from this case, but the Gemara seems to assume those halachos. So for now, we're going to focus on the first one of Shema Mina Ger Tzarek Shlosha, that a ger requires three. It sounds like not just three in general, but three for the mikvah. That's what it seems like from this Gemara, that three people, right, we're going to wait till tomorrow for you to be toveled. When we'll be able to get three dayanim together at the mikvah? Now, you don't have to learn that way, but that seems to be the assumption. So and that's the way the Beis Yosef learns it out, right? I was reading out of the Gemara, but the Beis Yosef continues. Shmami na ger tzarek shlosha, shmami na imat bilan ger belayla. I'm Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Rabbi Yochan ger tzarek shlosha. Mishpat ksiv bei perish Rashi, mishpat echad yelachem. But the fact that you need three is learned out from the word mishpat, because the pasuk says mishpat echad yelachem vila ger. You'll have one mishpat. Vein mishpat pachlus mishlosha. That by definition, any judgment, any action of Beis Din is going to require three people, and therefore we're comparing the halachos of Geirus, or the final action of Geirus, to the action of a Din Torah, and that it is a Maisa Beis Din. Okay? So far, so good, right? The Rambam says as well, Tavol beino vein asma, niskar beino vein asma, if you lifnei shayim, eino ger. And the Rambam even adds in that if you just go to the mikvah by yourself and say, okay, I'm hereby going to the mikvah in order to become a ger, right? And you take a dunk, right? So sorry, that doesn't work. However, the Tosos, Kochasu Tosos, Dahada in matbilin ger belayla, havinami mehai taimad de mishpak sibes, learned out from there as well, that can't go at night. That's not what I wanted to because I'm Rabbi Asim Ilo. So now up to the next line. V'garsinan su hasam. But the problem is, it also says over there. Now, over there is one daf earlier, right? The problem arises that one daf earlier, the Gemara makes a comment of Ahuda Havu Karu Karule Bar Arma, that there was this person that they were calling the Bar Arma. What does that mean? Why were they? What is it that they were calling him? So it's some kind of name that they were giving him because he was the son of a, well, he was son, well, a certain person was called the, he was the son of an Aramean woman. So Amrav Asi, Milo Tavlu Nidusa. So Rav Asi said, hey, why are you calling him the son of a, effectively, a non-Jew? Why are you calling him a non-Jew? Why are you calling him the son of a non-Jew? Did his mother not go to the mikveh? Meaning when she, and Nidusa, when she was in Nida, right? Don't we know that his mother was a Shomeris Tara Samishbacha? So she went to the mikveh at some point. And the Gemara quotes a similar comment about Hu Davu Karle Bar Arma. They called him the son of an Aramean man, right? Which seemingly shouldn't affect the son at all, or the child at all, although we'll see about that. So Amar Rav Yeshua ben Levi, Milo Tavu Likiryo. Did the father never go to the mikvah because he was a Baal Keri, right? Which in those days that was normal, right? So we know that they went to the mikvah, and therefore it means that the conversion happened, right? Or there was a conversion that happened. That's the implication of the Gemara, right? So the Rishonim all jump up and down and say,
who converted? The mother?
So that's a good question. Right, the implication of the Gemara is that whoever went to the mikvah, meaning the mother or the father, depending on which case you're talking about, we know that they went to the mikvah for ritual purposes, meaning the mother because she was a nida, the father because he was a Baal Keri. So obviously they converted, right? I think that's safe enough to say that we see from the Gemara. The problem the Rishonim raises is as, who? Where? How? Where did this conversion take place? Right? What are you referring to? Are you saying because she was a nida and went to the mikvah, that counts as the conversion? Or is there something else going on here, that perhaps the going to the mikvah indicates that it must be that she converted at some point? Right? So that's the question that the Rishonim raised.
Yeah, I mean, the question I had was, the first thing isn't even converted yet, so why is she going to the mikvah? She's not even Jewish.
Well, no. So the Gemara, the assumption seems to be that she went, meaning she converted somehow, right? We just don't know how, right? We don't know what it means.
Right, but to say that because the guy went to the mikvah because he was carried, which is, he wouldn't do unless he was already converted, you would think,
right? So that's that. So you're already hinting at one approach. Right, okay. So let's see the way the Beis Yosef learns this. So the Beis Yosef milo tavel induso satvila olal tvila das Yehudas v'chein milo tavel l'kiryo. So a chasu tosfos v'harash, right? Tema the hager tzarich shlosha. It says, what's going on here? So what if she went to the mikveh as because she was a nida or because she was a Baal Keri? She needs dayanim, right? She needs the dayanim to be there, right? Ve'ein derech nashim lahavi iman ish b'shas tefila, right? And you're saying, well, she went to the mikvah as a nida. Well, you know who's absolutely positively not there when she's going to the mikvah as a nida? Three dayanim, right? So what are you talking about that qualifies her as being a convert? So Tosfos's approach is
the mikvah, this dipping as part of the conversion, or is it just...
So that's the machlokas. That's the machlokas. There's nothing I'm hiding from you at this point, right? The Gemara makes that comment, right? And we know, or at least when you learn that Gemara, you should know that a daf later, right, the Gemara seems to make a comment that you need three dayanim present when she goes to the mikvah. So the Rishonim are bothered. What's going on here? Do you need three people present? How does the fact that she went as a nida mean anything or have any relevance to the fact to whether she converted or not, right? And if you're going to say, well, she went to the mikvah, so Tosfos says, yeah, but, the men aren't there, right? So dayanim aren't there. So how do you solve that problem? So Tosfos gives two answers. So v'yesh lomar, right? The had be'inan shlosha haynu l'kabalas mitzvos, aval lo l'tvila l'tvila. Tosfos says it's not true, right? That even though we started with a presumption that you need three dayanim there at the mikvah, Tosfos says it's not really true. It's true you do need a beis din present for the kabbalas hamitzvos, right? At some point, she or he needs to appear in front of a beis din, but that doesn't necessarily have to be when there's a mikvah at the mikvah. That could be later on. And what about the Gemara one daf later? And afal gab damirin lekamen damiracham omdim mibachutz. Even though the Gemara itself talks about the tamidi chachamim standing outside and her going in and seeing and watching and kind of knowing what's going on, says that's a din lechatchila, right? But that's not ma'akev. Right, it's not absolutely necessary for there to be dayanim present when she goes to the mikvah. That's answer number one of Tosos. Answer number two of Tosos: V'yesh beforshim dekevin diyadua lechol shetavla ki'ilu omdim sham. He says, or that no, beis din is required for the tvila, sort of. Right, that the fact that everybody knows that she went to the mikvah, so it's as if they were present. And it's as if they saw it. I mean, she's living this life. So it's like the three dayanim observe that, oh, that counts. So that, according to both answers of Tosfos, what seems to be happening is, Tosfos seems to be saying that, no, her action of going to the mikvah, or his action of going to the mikvah, actually is what counts for her, for her conversion. Either because you don't really need Rabbanim present when for that. That's only a din l'chachila, but not b'di'evet. Or just simply saying that, simply saying that it's as if Dayanim saw it, in that they know what happens in a mikvah, and they could attest to the fact that, well, she went, you know, she asked me taras mishpacha shayla, so she probably goes to the mikvah, right? So that's considered sufficient knowledge. So those are the two answers of Tosfos. Skip ahead a little bit to where it's in bold about four lines after it gets to be wide. So the harif teretz, the riff answers, the hadam rinan milo tavla nidasa, right? That what does it mean that doesn't she go to the mikvah nido, milo tavla kiryov, dievedhu, the lo paslinan libre, hoel vitavl l'shem kiryov, the ilav giyurahu, lo hava tavil l'shem kiryov. The riff says, no, it's not possible. Right? What does the Gemara mean when we say that, oh, she went to the mikvah or the father went to the mikvah? It means they must have converted, because otherwise, why would she be going to the mikvah because of her nida status? Right? That's the Rif's answer. Right? The Rif's answer is, it's not saying that, oh, because she went to the mikvah, therefore it's a conversion. Rather, it must be that there was a kosher conversion, because otherwise, why would she be going to the mikvah? In which case, the implication is, when did that conversion happen? Some other time, right? What time of day did it happen? During the day, right? That conversion. Who was present when that conversion happened? Three rabbis were present. What does the Gemara mean when it says, well, she must have converted because she went to the mikveh at night with only the mikveh lady present? Well, no mikveh lady would have let her in if not for the fact that it was known that she converted in a halachic appropriate way at some other time. That's the position of the Rif. Seemingly, it's also the position of the Rambam. Rambam seems to spell that out. Right. Right. But the Rambam requires that if a person shows up and says that, shows up and acts like a Jew, so we assume that they're Jewish until they want to actually marry in. When they want to marry in, so then we investigate, and they have to bring some kind of evidence that they converted appropriately. So it seems to be a machlokes, the Rif and the Rambam versus the Rush and Tosfos, right? That seems to be the way it lays out. The Ramban also seems to have a somewhat nuanced position, but that's the way it's spelled out with this machlokes. Okay, fine. Let's go to the Shulchan Aruch then. So in Shulchan Aruch, it's on the source sheet. There's one page in Hilchos Geirus and one page from Evan HaEzer in the source booklet thing, right? So the one that we're working on in Yeridaya. So we're in Sif Gimel there, right in the middle of the page, right where the Shulchan Aruch says Kol in Yonei Hager, right? Bein lahodiu hamitzvus lekablon, bein hamila, bein hatfila, tzarech shiyu begimel haksheirim ladun. That all the aspects of Geirus, right? Three aspects. Mila, Tevila, and Kabbalah Samitzvos, they should all be in front of three Dayanim, Uvayom, and they should all be during the day. Mihu, however, he says, Dafka l'chachila, aval b'dieved, im lo malo tavo el bifnei beiz, o krovim, uvalayla, afil lo tavo l'shem geiris, el isha tavo l'kiri, v'isha tavo l'nidasa, have ger, umutter b'yisraelis. Right? Continues on the Shulchan Aruch and says that's l'chadchila. But b'di'eved, if she went to the mikveh at any point as part of a mitzvah, right, and even not in front of three people, even in front of two people, and even in front of relatives, right, it will count b'di'eved. Except, what do you need three dayanim there for? Says the Shulchan Aruch, chutz mikabal sa mitzvos, shema'akeves im eina vayom uvishlosha. Except for the Kabbalah Samitzvos, that has to be A, during the day, and B, in front of three Dayanim. That is the, which is, and then he goes on and quotes, Ula Rifa Rambam, B'dievet Shetavol Omal B'fnei Shnayim Obalayla Ma'akei V'Asur B'Yisraelis. He says, however, according to the Rifa and the Rambam, even B'dievet, if you go to the mikvah in front of two people or at night, it's going to hold you back, and she's going to be prepared for Yisraelis. But if you married a Yisraelis for holy men of Ben, lo paslin an la. Right? But if they already got married and they had a son, so we're not going to passel him as a result. Now, it's unclear if that's the Shulchan Aruch. I assume that's the Shulchan Aruch talking. It's because he's saying we'll be choshish, which is a little odd. I mean, the whole Shulchan, I know Bob's going to get upset here, because, hey, wait a second, the Shulchan Aruch seems to be paskening like the Rush against the Rif and the Rambam. Right? And to which I say, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to do about that. Right? The Shulchan Aruch is, right, even he seems to be going against his own rules here, right? And he seems to be paskening like the opinion of the Rush against the Rif and the Rambam. That is what's going on. Okay, so this on itself actually came up with me personally. There was a when I was still in Phoenix, I got a call. What was the call exactly? I got a call from a guy. It was an Israeli guy divorcing a woman who, I don't know if she was a convert or not. Never got a Orthodox conversion. Right, so he was getting divorced from her, and he wanted me. This is it. He was a Baal Tshuva, and he wanted me to come and testify in court. This was the purpose. I didn't know this person so well. I don't think you ever met him. He wanted me to come testify in secular court where the divorce proceedings were happening, that a conservative conversion is not recognizable, and that's grounds for divorce because he's Jewish, and he's from. And how could he be married to this non-Jewish woman? That was supposed to be my testimony, which I don't remember what... I never ended up doing it. It never became necessary. But over the course of my conversation with him, it came out that there was a portion of their marriage that they were both from. They were both carrying on as Orthodox Jews to the point that she went to the mikveh regularly for like a year or two. So he wants to make the point that she's not Jewish because she never got an Orthodox conversion, but he slips in even though there was a period where we were acting as Orthodox Jews and to the point that she was regularly going to the mikveh. So I was like, whoa. Wait a second. I think I learned something in Yevamos about this once upon a time, right? And Kacha, that was the case in Yevamos. So he's thinking, there's no way I have to give her a get because she's not Jewish. So I remember calling Rabbi Willig and asking him, relating this conversation that she never got an Orthodox conversion, but yet she went to the mikveh regularly as a Jew. Rabbi Willig did one of his, whoa, wow, And he said, I don't think I've ever gotten a shaila from Daf Mem Vav in Maseches Yevamos before. Right? But he's like, yeah, Taka, that's it. That's the case. You should encourage him to give her a get, meaning that get l'chumra. Now, the problem is convincing him to give her a get l'chumra when his whole premise is, I don't have to give her a get because she's not Jewish, I think was not going to happen. But I did relate this to him, and then I think I left town. So I'm not really sure what the end of the story is over there. But anyway, so that case... Okay, so continues. So let's take a look here at the Shach. The Shach says about Bidyevid. I'm not sure why. Okay, so the Shach makes the comment about the Kabbalah Samitzvos, im lo kibol bifnei gimel, but with Kabbalah Samitzvos, that, if it wasn't accepted in front of three people, afilu b'di'evid ma'akev. So then, that would be ma'akev, even b'di'evid, k'mo shekasu atosu v'arash, meaning that, for sure, is going to be required. One second. That's going to be required. I mean, for sure, you're going to need three dayanim at that point. Aval tevila umila havi gigmar din shnis bar sham de gomer in belayla. But when it comes to, about tevila umila havi gigmar din shnis bar sham de gomer in belayla. But when it comes to Tvila Mila, that's like a Gemar Din. That's like the end story, which could be done at night, meaning a Din Torah has to be started during the day. But it could be finished at night. So it continues the Shach and says, V'tzarchi, and he says, wait a second, Ksas, I have a question. He says, I don't understand, because if you look in the beginning of Choshen Mishpat, where it talks about the laws of Dinei Torah, there the Shulchan Aruch quotes the position that b'di'evit, if you do a Din Torah at night, it's good, right? So im kein l'fi zeh v'adei d'afilu b'kaval samitzos talking b'di'evit v'layla. He says, why is it that in Hilchos Dayanis, when it comes to a Din Torah, the Mechaber says you could rely on the position that a Din Torah can be done at night, but when it comes to the Halachos of Geirus, he doesn't quote that position at all. So he says, and he doesn't even quote that as a position. He says, maybe it's only, you could be more makil when it comes to Dini Mamanos, because there you always have Hefker Beis and Hefker to rely on. Right? Essentially, when it comes to Mamanos, I don't say there are no rules, but like you could kind of skirt all the rules by simply saying that the Rabbanim have the right to treat all money as hefker anyways, and they could set those rules as follows. But when it comes to Hilchos Geirus, there it's actually required, right? He says it with regards to chalitza yesh lifsok l'chumra. When it comes to chalitza, there we're going to be machmir and required absolutely during the day. That feel dievet a chalitza psula b'layla. That chalitza will be puzzle at night. Right, you could rely on this yeshomer when it comes to mamonos. The chalitza dummy, and the Shach says, and this geirus is going to be like chalitza. What's he getting at here? So the Shach is making an important distinction, right? That when it comes to dinei Torah, so would we call geirus a din Torah? We're going to a din Torah in order to convert. Not really, right? Rather, it's called, labeled in halacha, a maisa basin. There are some things that are just required to happen in front of basin, right? One of those is chalitza. Another one of those is geirus, I don't know if there are any other ones. Maybe knossos, maybe certain halachos of geirus. When it comes to actual mamonos, that's not a maisa based din, that's a judgment of based din. And therefore, b'di'evit, that could be at night. But when it comes to the actual maisa based din, things that happen during the day, that based din is required for it to take place. So that that would all the laws would apply, and that would absolutely be required to happen during the day. There is a comment that Rav Salvechik actually has in Al Hatshuva, of all places. If I could find it quickly, there it is. That where he spells out in his beautiful language that. This idea, the literal, that there, he says there's two aspects when it comes to a geirus. One is their acceptance upon themselves of doing all the mitzvos, which he adds in a line here, which happens as soon as circumcision takes place. I'm not sure why he says that. But then he says the second aspect is the acceptance of the yoke of commandments, which goes to the ritual immersion, is tantamount to entering into the covenant with God. In the opinion of the Bali Tosos, the immersion must be performed in the presence of a legally constituted court. Not sure why he says that, right? Not for witnessing the immersion itself, but for the formal acceptance of the yoke of the mitzvos, which is an act that requires the presence of the court. And why must it be a court of three? Because that's from the verse that God standeth in the congregation of God, in the midst of judges he judges, which means that the Shechina is present when you have Dayanim there. Right? So Rav Salvechik is it's a pretty interesting homiletic point, like one of these classic Rav Salvechik halachic homiletic points. They're saying, why is it that the three, you need Dayanim? Because when you have three Dayanim Mumchim, the Shechina is present. And by the Shechina being present, that's what enables the Geirus to actually take place. Right? An interesting take. Okay? So that is the requirement to have the three Dayanim. The Shach then makes a comment.
It has to be during the day.
What? And during the day. Right. It's a Maisa Basin. That's the point. Yeah. So, but again, as Tosos pointed out, B'di'evin, maybe that could happen during the day and the mikvah could be at night. Right? That could also be a potential. According to the Shita of Tosus. Okay, so comes the Shach and says, Avali Nisa Yisraelis, right, in Yud Aleph. Right, if he marries a Jewish woman and they have a son, we're not going to passel that son. Right? Why would we be passeling that son? What are we talking about here, right? This is a male who's, we're going to say Suffolk Jewish, right, and marries a Jewish woman, right? So what impact does that have on the child, right? What do we call the child of a, right, of a male, of a Jewish woman and a non-Jewish man, right? What do we call that child? We call that child Jewish, right? So what's the issue here? So the Shach says, so even though we paskin, right, an ovi kochavim that has bia with a Jewish girl, the child is kosher. Mikol makom nafkamina the havlad kasher lekahuna, right? The nafkamina is that child kasher lekahuna. Masha'inki menola mina ovi kochavim kemoshe isparve even ezer sif zayin, right? Recall this child kasher lekahuna as opposed to another child from an ovi kochavim, as we learn in even ezer simin zayin. Inavi nafkamina linya pidyon aben, or we might say that there's a nafkamina with regards to pidyon aben, as maybe we'll learn. Later on.
Be a Kohen. He's not Jewish.
What?
If the man is not Jewish, how can he be a Kohen?
No, not about that. It's about, let's say they have a daughter. If a Jewish, a non-Jewish male and a Jewish female have a daughter.
Okay, so she can't.
So,
marry a Kohen.
Well, not so fast. Possibly, such a girl. Excuse me. Possibly such a girl is prohibited from marrying a Kohen, right? So where is that from? So I'm, where is it? I have to take notes. Ah, second. Right, so that actually, that's that Gemara, almost coincidentally, happens to be a daf earlier in Maseches Yevamos. Where the Gemara, I could have put this this in as well, But the Gemara there has a discussion about this, where is it? Yeah, that makes the comment about an Ovid Kochavim that is Boel, a Bas Yisrael, the Vlad is Mamzer, while Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, no, Havlad Mikulkal. That's the terminology that's used. This is Yivamos Mem Hei Amar Aleph. It wasn't in the sources, though. So, what does it mean, Mikulkal? What does that mean, the child is impaired? Right? So, Luman, what is that? Ilei Mikulkal Ha Amar Rabbi Yeshua, Vlad Kasher, right? We said it's Kasher. El Lekahuna, right? We're going to say she's prohibited from marrying a Kohen. Why? Where do we get this from? Right? So the Gemara actually says, the chul ha'amurai de'machshiri modush ha'vlad pagum l'chuhuna mikav l'chomer mi'almana. Right? They're going to say that she's prohibited from marrying a Kohen based on a kav l'chomer from an almana. Why? What is that? Ma'almana l'chohen gadol. Right? If a Kohen gadol marries a almana, marries a widow, she'eni sur shava b'kol bina pagum, right, where nobody else is prohibited from marrying a widow. Only the Kohen Gadol is prohibited from marrying a widow. And yet that child is going to be pagum. That child is going to be, not allowed to marry, you know, not a full-fledged Kohen. Zu she'isur shava b'kol, this child, this case, right, the intermarriage, it's usher to everybody, eno din shebina pagum. Certainly that child should be pagum as well. Right, so the Gemara actually figures out a kal v'chomer. If the child of a Kohen Gadol who married a widow is considered a, I can't believe I'm forgetting the term right now, not a mamzer, but a, I'm forgetting the term, right? A cholol, right? A cholol, a somebody who's not allowed to marry a Kohen, certainly the daughter of an intermarriage should be prohibited from marrying a Kohen, right? That's the kal v'chomer that the Gemara puts forth. So it sounds like it's halacha. The Gemara leaves it at that point. The only problem is that an amud later, Amem Hei Amud Beis, the Gemara makes a comment just saying, by the way, the halacha is that an Ovei Kochavim in Eved Aval Bas Yisrael, a Vlad is Kasher Ben Penuya Ben Ish Asish. That if a non-Jew has relations with a Jewish woman, right, the child is going to be Kasher. And doesn't make any comment there about being prohibited to a Kohen. So is the child prohibited from a Kohen? Do you pass in like the earlier part of the Gemara, like the conclusion of the Gemara? It's a machlokas rishonim. The Rush says the child is prohibited from marrying a Kohen, and the other rishonim say he's not. And that's quoted in Shulchan Aruch. In Shulchan Aruch, where is it? And in Siman Zayin, which is in the source sheet over there. So Siman Zayin Sif. Sif Yud Zayin in Eben Ezer, it says Kusiv Eben Al Bas Yisrael Vavlad Mimen Abbas Ita Bas Paguma L'Kahuna. The child is considered Pagum L'Kahuna. However, the Nosei Kalim on the side, both the Chelkas Mechokek as well as the Beis Shmuel, both say that if they got married, Eino Teitze, right? That if they did marry already, you have the right. They have the right to remain married. They don't have to be prohibited. Right, so that seems to be the psak, right? That the daughter of an intermarried couple whose mother was Jewish, right, is not allowed to marry a Kohen. But if she did somehow, right, somehow it slipped through the cracks, or actually what would be more common in these situations would be the opposite case. She didn't know that he was a Kohen, right? Something like that. Right, they got married, and that right. If she's the daughter of an intermarriage, it's very possible that she's not religious. He's not religious. They get married, then they become bali tshuva. Hey, wait a second, I'm a Kohen. What happens then? So then you have the right to say im nichnas lo teitze. Right, they got married. They don't have to get divorced after that. I came across an article from Rabbi Jachter, where he quoted the article that Rav Schechter once at an RCA convention quoted the following Shaila, right? That there was a rabbi of a shul, an Orthodox rabbi, right, who had a congregant who had the situation, right, that they were the daughter of an intermarriage was marrying a guy who was a Kohen, right? And there was nothing he could do to stop the marriage. So he's like, okay, I'm not going to be Masadar Kedusha. I'm not going to bless the marriage. But he asked, it's unclear for me whether he asked the Rav or he asked Rav Shechter, but he said, but hey, can I go to the party afterwards? Right? Once they're married already, we're not going to tell them to get divorced, right? So maybe I could go to the party to celebrate once the marriage already happened. To which, and it was unclear for me whether Rav Shechter Paskin is based on something the Rav said, or it was a story that happened with the Rav, but the response was, no, 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 once you're checking off that you're coming to the party, right, that's blessing the marriage, and you shouldn't be going even to the party. But that then leads to a an interest that, so this article from Rabbi Jachter, so he quoted the story that this happened in Eretz Yisrael. This happened in one of the Bati Dinim, and this case showed up, and the Beis Din paskened that, sorry, you can't get, that they were already, what was the case exactly? Yeah, the case was that they were already engaged, I think, right? And in some scenarios, you could say that they're, is that the case? Right. They came to get married to the rabbinate, and the rabbinate said, sorry, we can't allow you to get married because this is in violation of halacha, right? And these were people that weren't necessarily from, but it's Israel, so they gotta, you know, you gotta go through the rabbanut, and they're like, sorry, we're not marrying you off. They went to a Beis Din. The Beis Din said, they're right, right? We're not going to marry you off under these circumstances. So then they appealed to a higher Beis Din, or I'm not sure how it works. They went to some appeals court, and the appeals court said that no, that, and we'll see this in Hilchos Geiris, this kind of shows up as well, that if you're already engaged, that already somewhat attains the status of nichnas, especially if they're already living together, right? That maybe attains the status of nichnas already. So then they have the right to say that nichnas lo teitze, and therefore we'll allow the marriage to go through. And this apparently raised a whole big ruckus, right? Was that permitted or was it not permitted? So apparently Rabbi Bleich has an article where he says that an appeals court, right? What happened here, right? A Beis Din paskin the shaila, and then it went to another Beis Din on appeal, right? So Rabbi Bleich said, an appeals court has no right to undermine the position of a lower Beis Din, right? Is there such an idea of an appeals court in halacha at all? That's interesting, shaila number one, right? But once you're assuming that there is such an idea, right, the appeals court can only override the decision if there's something wrong with the first decision, right? But in this case, it was a straight-up machlokas, whether you should paskin, whether we would permit them to get married or not. And what's the machlokas based on? The machlokas is based on whether this prohibition is an isur d'oraisa or whether it's an isur d'rabbanan, right? Who says it's an isur d'oraisa? So Rav Moshe, and that's actually a tshuva that I put into the source packs. And Evan Ezer Chilak Gimel Sif Simen Hey. See, Rav Moshe has the case of a couple, right, that were living together, that got a secular marriage, right, and now they want to have a Jewish marriage. But it turns out that they're this scenario, right? They're this scenario of a son of a daughter of an intermarriage, and he's a Kohen. So they come to Rav Moshe and says, well, they, should we consider them as if they're married already because they got married in secular court? To which Rav Moshe says, absolutely not, right? You have no right to be makel on this case because it's an iser d'oraisa, right? This marriage of a kohen to a daughter of an intermarriage. It's an iser d'oraisa, and we're not going to rely on that kula for this to allow this marriage to happen. And you're going to tell me that there's a shas ad chak, there's already a child, and you're going to force them to get divorced, or you're going to force them to become not frum anymore? Rav Moshe says, tough luck. That's not my problem, right? We can't override an isur d'oraisa. That's the sheet of Rav Moshe. However, there are other achronim, perhaps chief among them Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg and others, who paskin that no, it's this that while it's true that it is usser, it's only an isur d'rabbanan. So it's only an issur derabanan, so then you have room to be a little bit more makel. So that's the other side of the story in this case of the Din Torah. Meaning the Din Torah in Israel, paskin in this case, they paskin according to Rav Moshe, right? But it could be that even Rav Moshe might defer to a majority opinion, right? Most poskim actually come out on the other side of Rav Moshe and say that it's only issur derabanan, and therefore maybe there's a little bit more room to be makel. So maybe they have the right to be makel in that case. Furthermore, I believe the Sfardi, I think there's a Rav Masas and Rabbi Amar, I think the Sfardim postgame seem to be more on the other side of this, and we're part of this team that we're pushing to be makel in that case. So perhaps that's grounds to then say that, no, there is enough reason to say that the appeals court should override the lower court. And it sounds like that's what actually happened. Anyways,
the original case, I probably got into this because the man had the questionable conversion. Now we're saying, okay, even if he was obeying to Kavan, then, you know, according to the right.
No. So the Shas comment is as follows, right? The Shulchan Aruch concluded by saying that if he marries a non-Jew, marries a Jew, the child will be kosher and we won't passel. So the Shach scratches his head and says, what are you talking about passel? Why would we be passeling? Right? What would we passel? So the Shach says, oh, it must be this case, or not must be, two possibilities. One of those cases is, we'll allow the daughter of that marriage to marry a Kohen. Implying what? That if it wasn't for the fact that it was a suffolk, if it was just the case of a non-Jewish man and a Jewish woman, that daughter would not be able to marry a Kohen. The fact that the father was a suffolk Jew therefore gives us enough leeway to say that we would be permitted to marry that she would be permitted to marry a Kohen. And by the way, what gives you the right to be makil in that situation? That's why other achronim say it must be it's only an issur derabanan. Right, if it was an issur d'oraisa of that a kohen can't marry the daughter of an intermarriage, so then you might have to be machmir in that case. The fact that it's the shach under these based on a sveika d'dina permits that marriage to take place might imply that the whole thing is only an issur d'rabanan in the first place. Okay. So the truth is, we were going to have the other pages have to do with the makeup of the Beis Din, but that's probably a little too important to rush through. So maybe we'll call it here and pick up with that in Mirza Shem next week.
So the cases in Israel were the same thing. The guy had a questionable conversion, or he was clearly not Jewish.
No, the case in Israel was he. It was a parent, right? It was clearly the daughter of an intermarriage, right? That everybody agreed to. The one suffix is to say, yeah, but they're already, like, sometimes we say that being engaged already is kind of like being married already, right? Even though we're trained that, you know, there's no halachic status of getting engaged, doesn't mean anything, nothing happens until the wedding. Yeah, but under these shasab chak situations, sometimes we look at it as already as nichnas, that they're already, like, married. So that was what this argument debased them was about. Rav Moshe said absolutely not, it's meaningless. While the appeals court wanted to say, no, that's already considered married and we're not going to make them separate under these circumstances.
Right, but there was clearly an intermarriage. It wasn't like
yes. Right. Okay. All right. Good night.
Good night. Thank you.
Okay. Good night.
Take care.
Sheldon, wake up.
Sheldon.